hello. Thanks for coming this afternoon. I'm Gretchen Wagner, Curatorial Assistant in the Department of Prints and Illustrated Books here at MoMA. And today I'll be speaking about Kirchner and the Berlin Street, the exhibition currently on view in the third floor. I was the curatorial assistant on that exhibition, working with Deborah Y., the chief curator of Prints and Illustrated Books, who organized the show and authored the catalog that accompanies it. So, in the relatively short period between 1913 and 15, the German artist Ernst Ludwig Kirchner executed a series of paintings known as the Berlin Street Scenes, seen here in installation as they are in the galleries. These are thought to be the high point of Kirchner's career and of the German Expressionist movement overall, and they're the focal point for the Kirchner and the Berlin Street, the exhibition on the third floor here at the museum. This exhibition marks the first time these seven works have been brought together in the United States, and likely the first time they have ever been brought together, even in Kirchner's lifetime. So just to start us off, I was wondering if anyone would like to volunteer their guess at the identity of the women that are depicted in these street scenes. Who are they, if they're a specific person? What are they, if they are a particular, where are they going? Go ahead.
Wealthy department store shoppers?
That's what many people actually think that they are, but in fact, they're not, as many of you might already know, and that they are actually streetwalkers or prostitutes that populated the streets of Berlin during the teen years, 19-teens. And today, I'll get into that, this particular motif that Kirchner chose and why he based seven of great works around the prostitute and their presence on the Berlin street, and try to unpack some of the meaning of that, specifically what it meant for Kirchner, what it meant for the period of time he was working in, and get to the bottom of some of the mystery that's involved in these paintings that still, you know, are discussed widely in trying to figure out what he was trying to communicate. So taken together, these works have proved an indelible metaphor for big city life. Kirchner made the unusual choice of the prostitute as his primary symbol, while elements more commonly representing a city, such as buildings, sidewalks, shops, vehicles, crowds of people, play only a peripheral role. The exact order of execution of these seven works is uncertain, but it is thought that Five Women on the Street, which is currently in the collection of the Museum Ludwig in Cologne, that's here, is the first, and that was started in 1913. Then it went on to, was followed by the Neue Galerie New York's Berlin Street Scene, which you see there, then MoMA's Berlin Street Painting, also in 1913. And then in 1914, he did three more canvases. This, Friedrichstrasse, Berlin, Street Scene, Friedrichstrasse in Berlin, which is housed in the Staatsgalerie Stuttgart. Two Women on the Street from the Kunstsammlung Nordrhein-Westfalen in Düsseldorf. And then finally that year, his masterpiece, the largest canvas of the series, Potsdamer Platz, which is from the collection of the Neue Nationalgalerie in Berlin. And then in 1915, he finished the series with this painting, which is in a small museum, the Wanderheit Museum in Wuppertal, Germany. And in fact, it doesn't leave that museum very often, so this is pretty much the least seen work of the series. And that's called Women on the Street. So this order of execution continues to be debated among art historians. So the order I showed you is what is thought to be in Donald Gordon, who wrote the catalog Raisonne on Kirchner, believes that is the order, but scholars have had other ideas. And this not understanding or not knowing for certain when and how Kirchner did do these works is sort of adds to the mystery surrounding these puzzling compositions. Today I hope to provide you with some possible interpretations of the street scenes, and we'll do so by examining Kirchner's biography during the period, as well as other motifs featured in his artwork at the time. In addition, we will consider the creative process Kirchner undertook as he developed the street scene theme, deepening his understanding of his subject matter through investigatory studies in many mediums, including pencil sketches, pen and ink, pastel and charcoal, as well as in the printmaking techniques of etching, woodcut, and lithography. Through a range of effects, the street scene paintings evoke the striking contradictions of city life. Kirchner superimposes a jaded artificiality over its excitement and glamour, situating the garish yet exotic streetwalker in an atmosphere suggesting loneliness and alienation, as well as agitation and danger. Paint is applied in spontaneous, splintered brushstrokes that create jagged forms and express an immediacy and energy that approximate the stimulating yet hectic urban environment. Vivid pinks and reds are enticing, but acidic greens and caustic yellows give an unhealthy pallor to all they touch and betray an air of decadence. Kirchner's strangely elongated figures are confrontational, situated in a frontal space where perspective is distorted, so the background comes forward rather than receding, implicating the viewer in the scene. His approach might be considered up close and personal, if it were not for the fact that the faces are so mask-like and decidedly impersonal. Kirchner's city is really impenetrable as it is magnetic. Numerous essays have been written on the street scene paintings, and they try to contribute to unraveling the meanings embedded in these complex works. Nearly all authors point to the modern metropolis exemplified by Berlin as their overarching subject. Kirchner's city has been seen as, one, a symbolic setting for the contemporary human psyche, a very agitated psyche. For others, it has been exemplified, it's exemplified a money economy that was really burgeoning in the metropolis at that time and its consequent alienation, while also reflecting the growth of consumerism and the leisure time activity of shopping in the department stores that were coming into being at that time. Also, it's been discussed as depicting instability, recognized as paralleling the formulations of the literary figures of expressionism that were being authored by other by contemporary writers at the time. So Kirchner City has also been understood as the outgrowth of a Germanic tradition, and also reflecting an interest in Darwinism at the time. These are all essays that have been written, some by the people that are coming later in October. But yet, running through all these various interpretations is like a very common vocabulary, distinctive in the words chosen to describe these paintings. It's a very disturbing atmosphere that they describe, using words like fragmented, distorted, jarring, and nervous, while also acknowledging the dynamism, spontaneity, excitement, and pervasive eroticism found there. So I'm just bringing this out to your attention right now, this vocabulary that's used, because I think it's something that maybe if you were lucky enough to have an Art History 101 course where they did spend some time on Expressionism and German Expressionism in particular, that's what's usually brought to the bear as how to talk about these paintings. And I think that, and what I'm trying to show today a little bit is how that it's much more nuanced than just this sense that it was the eve of World War I and artists were just imbued with this great fear, and that came out in jagged brushstrokes, dissonant forms, and colors that, might not be the most pleasant of palettes. And I just, so today I'll try to elaborate a little bit on the different meanings at hand. Born in 1880, Kirchner lived a comfortable life as the son of a chemist, moving periodically between Germany and Switzerland with his family during his childhood. His father was a chemist in the paper industry, which actually came to bear later on in Kirchner's own choices of paper that he used. He was very sophisticated in what he chose to make his papers on. Here, this lithograph done on this very vivid yellow paper, which phenomenally is still this vivid. You'll see it in the galleries, which is kind of rare as someone who works in a works on paper department to see a piece of paper survive with such vivid color for so long. Usually the inks can be relatively fugitive. So we feel that he had a good knowledge of the chemistry of paper. Eventually, after moving quite frequently with his family, he finally graduated from the gymnasium, the German equivalent of, roughly the German equivalent of American high school, in Chemnitz, formerly in East Germany, and went to Dresden to study architecture at his parents' bidding to take up a more practical profession, although he really longed to study the fine arts. In Dresden, he met other students in similar positions such as himself, and like him, with little artistic training, but really the longing to gain that artistic training. And together, these friends formed the collective Brücke in 1945, Brücke or Bridge, or sorry, in 1905. The original members were Fritz Bleyl, Erich Heckel, Carl Schmidt-Rottluff, and Kirchner. Now, in the painting you see here, which Kirchner painted in 1925, it's actually depicted from left to right, Otto Müller, who came a little later, Kirchner, Heckel, and Schmidt-Rottluff. Bleyl's not depicted because, as you can imagine, with a collective, it was not always that harmonious, and so sometimes people came in and out of the picture, and here he chose to only depict this group of people, although many more were included over the years. So eventually in 1906, Max Pechstein was to enter the group and then followed by Otto Müller and then in 1910. And Pechstein and Kirchner were to really play key roles in the group over the years. And various other people came and went over the span, but the people that I've named were really the core group. And so it was within the context of Brücke that Kirchner established his artistic identity. The name Brücke, or bridge, is thought to have derived from the writing of philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who saw man as a bridge rather than an endpoint, so in a state of constant becoming and discovering. In the Brücke program, which you see on the right here, this is the title page which Kirchner did the woodcut for, and he also carved the manifesto that was inside from a woodcut, so the actual manifesto is a woodblock print. And in this program, Kirchner and his friends called for a turn away from bourgeois culture and the rejection of traditional art as it was taught in the academies. Members of the group depended on each other to learn new skills. Their focus was the nude, and unclothed models lounging around their studios were commonplace. Among their practices was drawing the nude in brief sessions of 15 minutes each, then changing places with each other and asking their model to strike a new pose, one that was natural and unselfconscious. And this is known as the 15-minute sketch, that it's something that comes up in discussion of the Brücke often, a very specific or particular technique to these artists or practice. Together, as Kirchner later described, they were, quote, driven by the very naive and pure need to bring life and art into harmony with one another. In fact, there was often little differentiation between their creative activities and everyday lifestyle, as the Brücke artists often worked in a communal fashion in each other's studios, which they decorated, sometimes collectively. And here you see an example of that. This is Kirchner's studio in Dresden, circa 1910-11. And you see the decorations that they, in fact, would add to these settings. Here, depictions of couples in different sexual positions, perhaps that they were striking themselves and sketching right there in the studio. They painted directly on the walls. They also, here you can't see in the darkness, but you'll see in a later photograph, they painted fabrics with a lot of motifs inspired by non-Western decorative arts that they were seeing in different museums they would visit. And here in the back, a reproduction of presumably maybe a Buddhist figure. Kirchner was known that he had a catalog of reproductions of the Ajanta cave paintings in India, and he was very inspired by those, and you would see those sort of motifs coming out in the work that he did. So they also vacationed together along with their models and girlfriends, continuing the artistic dialogue, whether from the studio, an ethnographic museum, or a dance hall. In addition to developing a shared artistic vision, Brucke artists actively sought recognition of their group. Such joint activities, in addition to frequently exhibiting their work together, led to unusual cohesiveness among the Brucke artists, in addition to providing for the incubation of new artistic ideas and the sharing of influences. From enthusiasm for tribal art to the absorption of painting styles of Vincent van Gogh, Edvard Munch, and the Fauves. And here you see some of that playing out in these environments. Before long, however, the lure of the big metropolis began to take hold of the young men, and in 1908, Pechstein moved to Berlin and encouraged the others to join him. Here you see a picture of Potsdamer Platz, which was in 1913. This was one of the great centers of Berlin and still is today, although it looks extremely different. If those of you who have been there recently, it's dominated by the Sony Center and some other structures. But this is how it looked in 1913. And just to point out a few things, this is the train station, Potsdamer Bahnhof. Here we have Café Vaterland, which was roughly the equivalent of like Mohican Sun or something like that. Gambling, dancing, reviews, variety reviews, and restaurants, just an entertainment center. And then just this crisscrossing of streets, which were populated by both electric streetcars and the old-fashioned horse and carriage. It's hard to see much order in how they're really crossing and who has the right of way. So it was quite hectic. Maybe not in today's standards, but at the time you can imagine that it was something to navigate. So the Brucke artists came to believe that joining the Berlin art world was essential to bringing them proper renown. Kirchner relocated in October of 1911, and Heckel and Schmidt-Rottluff soon followed. At this time, Berlin was by then the third largest city in Europe, after Paris and London, having expanded from approximately 850,000 inhabitants at the time of the German reunification in 1871 to 2 million by the turn of the century, as industry and consequently jobs exploded in the region. Alongside this dramatic population increase, a new consumer culture had materialized, with ever newer products displayed in fancy department stores. Buying and selling were fundamental to this newly industrialized urban society. On the streets of Berlin, crowds were a fact of life, and consequently, contemporary sociologists began to describe a mentality of detachment that was needed to cope with crowded conditions and an overabundance of stimulation. The streetwalker, or prostitute, was thought by some to be particularly estranged figure populating this environment. Rampant in Berlin at the time, prostitution was a big city phenomenon, caused in some measure by dislocations that resulted from rapid shifts in population. Streetwalkers were commonplace, especially since bordellos had been made illegal there in the mid-19th century. And just to add to that, they had become illegal, so there was some regulation. When they did become illegal, streetwalkers were asked to register with the police, so that there was some government control of it at the time. But it wasn't in these very specific locations. So they were forced out onto the street. But contrary to how we might think of prostitution or the figure of the prostitute today in contemporary culture, where might be, you know, lack of clothing or very low cut clothing or high cut clothing, the prostitutes of the time really had to fit into the society around them and the different people that were also on the sidewalks. So they tended to dress as sort of an upper class woman, or, you know, in the hats and the furs, so they sort of would fit in. So the way to communicate, because they didn't have a very distinct look, the way they would communicate was much more by eye contact and gesture. And so it was a very subtle way of sort of expressing sexuality. And something that, I don't know, I think in our era where sexuality is so overt in media and different things, that it's a little bit hard, or at least hard for me to kind of wrap my head around what that might be. Maybe it's a little more like flirting or something, but that was more the operation, the way of operating for them as prostitutes. So it is into this environment that Kirchner entered in 1911, setting up his studio in the same building where Peckstein lived, and soon its atmosphere rivaled the environments that they had constructed in Dresden. And just to point out, this is Gerda, his girlfriend who he met in Berlin and who became his lifetime partner. And just to notice the same reproduction hovering above her head that we saw in the last photograph, and then also the painted fabrics, painted walls, and then also some carvings. Kirchner was a very, very prolific wood carver. And he has a huge body of work of carved wood, very much looking like this, in this, a lot of it functional pieces of furniture, and this is one of them, and but always very influenced by non-Western practices and decorative arts. So at this time, during the summers, Kirchner continued his practice of retreating with many of the other Brucke members to a natural setting for relaxation and painting. He spent time at the nearby Moritzburg Ponds while living in Dresden, and from Berlin, they would travel up to Fehmarn, which was on a Baltic island off the northern coast of Germany. Back in Berlin, Peckstein and Kirchner established a school in their building with hopes that it would generate income and spread their painterly aesthetic. But things did not work out as hoped. The school ultimately failed and closed after only 1 year. However, despite the fate of this school, the artists of Brucke had some early encouragement. And like I said, one of the reasons they wanted to move to Berlin out of Dresden was because they really felt that Dresden was a bit provincial if they wanted to make it as big artists. They wanted to get out there, get their names known. And Berlin is where the galleries were, where the critics were, if other artists came to Germany, they would go to Berlin, or foreign artists came to Germany, they go to Berlin. It's where they would really begin their network. And so they did end up meeting you know, the critics, and one of them was a man by the name of Herwart Walden. And Herwart Walden ran a publication called Der Sturm, or The Storm, and a gallery as well with the same name. And these are two examples of the Sturm publication, both from 1911, August and September. And as you can see, they'd be illustrated on the front cover. And here are two woodcuts by Kirchner that are on the covers of these two issues. So Herwart did support the Brucke artists for a while and printed their work in his publication, showed it in the galleries. But ultimately, he really got drawn more towards the straight a non-objective abstraction that was taking place at the time. And the Brucke artists were very much committed to doing figurative work, and they did not want to move into abstraction, although the figures that they did draw have abstract qualities about them, in the sense that they're not anatomically, you know, ideal. But nonetheless, it wasn't the sexy movement such as abstraction was at the time. So Herwart Walden started showing the Blaue Reiters more, Blaue Reiter artists out of Munich more and more, and the Brucke artists kind of fell by the wayside. So that was really hard on Kirchner especially, and the other Brucke artists. So it is at this time, one of great personal transition and loss, that Kirchner commenced his work on the street scene paintings. Oh, and sorry, let me just add, so there was this, you know, they weren't feeling like they were having this popularity that they were expecting. And then ultimately Peckstein shows in an exhibition that the Berliner Succession, which the Brucke artists had staunchly rejected showing their work at, Peckstein gets antsy, shows in that show, and they kick him out of the group. Then Kirchner writes something that the others don't agree with. They kick, they, you know, there's infighting, and ultimately the group dissolves in May 1913. And here was this very cocoon-like, supportive community, and that just fell apart. And all of the artists, especially Kirchner, was kind of let out into this big city with the support group now having dissolved. So this was quite difficult as well. And that's when Heber begins the Street Scene series. Kirchner would talk about this period as being particularly lonely. He included the years leading up to that point as well, he said this, that the paintings originated in the years 1911 to 14, in one of the loneliest times of my life, during which an agonizing restlessness drove me out into the streets day and night, which were filled with people and cars. It has been noted by Sherwin Simmons, a scholar on this subject, that Kirchner's companion, Erna Schilling, who I showed you in that photograph of the Berlin studio, remembered his mood changing throughout the course of 1913. She reportedly discussed this condition with one of his doctors in 1917 and stated that she told the psychiatrist that Kirchner had this feeling that his mode of life was much too bourgeois, and as the result he began to drink heavily and live more irregularly. Increasingly, he began to suffer headaches and anxiety attacks, which were followed in the summer of 1914 by growing paralysis of his extremities. He also, as Sherwin Simmons, the scholar, goes on to report from his research that due to fears relating to the war, by the winter of 1914-15, he was drinking a liter of absinthe a day and becoming addicted to Veronal, a sleeping medication. Kirchner's anxiety would only intensify and ultimately prompted his move to the mountains of Switzerland, where he would reside and undergo treatments until he took his own life in 1938. So it's this time of decline that is when he somehow mustered all this energy to do these canvases, which is very remarkable, I think. So perhaps his relative isolation fostered a new determination regarding his own artistic goals. Kirchner's true motivations may never be known, but not long after the series was completed, he made this revealing statement. Quote, "I am now like the coquettes I once painted. The merest brushstroke now, gone tomorrow. Nonetheless, I still am still trying to put my thoughts in order, and from all the confusion, create an image of the times, which is my task after all." So just two slides quickly to show, give some context of the work that he was doing right up to the breakup, and then move on into a closer examination of the street scenes. Here you see early depictions of the city. These, the two on the left are of Dresden etchings and dry point, and then on the right, MoMA's painting, Dresden Street from 1908. And as you can see on the two etchings, that they are rather, typical portraits of a building or a city neighborhood, studies of perspective and how to depict architecture. And they are, but the people on the streets are very minimal. You can barely see them. There's a couple walking right there, here, maybe a couple there. But it's really, the personality of those images are really the buildings, the architecture, which may be, something that was a outgrowth of his training, his brief training as an architect. Dresden Street is a little different. As you can see, the figures do dominate. But here, unlike the Berlin street scenes, It's much more, you know, these seem to be like everyday shoppers going out, taking a stroll, small child with one of the mothers holding a hand with maybe a candy or something, a toy in her hand. Much more, or less maybe dangerous in its mood, although the colors are very, very striking. But those are often equated more to the influence of Munch on him at the time, and the Fauves and his use of oranges and creating a very different mood than what he ultimately did with the Berlin street scenes, which are sort of much more off-putting in a way. So those are some early street scenes, and then also. They, as I mentioned before, the Brucke artists essentially focus much of their output around the female nude. And one, the nude in the studio, two, the nude in nature, and then also the female figure as a dancer. And Kirchner, as I also mentioned, they would sketch in their studios, but then they would also go on to have their vacations out in the ponds or by Dresden or up north, the North Sea. And here are two examples of work that Kirchner did at the time with the other Brucke artists. And you can see, you know, it's very relaxed poses, doing everyday things. Here a woman looking at herself in the mirror from, you know, holding up a hand mirror, seeing her reflection in the mirror hanging on the wall. Kind of these more fluid forms, maybe akin to Matisse, which did in fact influence them at the time and they were aware of, and also some of the non-Western figures, such as the Buddhist figure that he saw the reproduction hanging in the back of his studio. He does move on to, especially in the early years, right before, right as he got to Berlin and the Brucke group was still together, he moved on to this little bit more jagged, elongated figure type in his women. And that, there's a funny quote that he attributes to the fact that he had met this new girlfriend in Berlin, Erna, and her sister, Gerda, who were both dancers. And supposedly, those two women had a much more architectonic body structure that was much harsher than the very soft body structure of the girlfriends that he had had in Dresden. So he felt that there was a very different body type to be had in Dresden versus Berlin. And that's what he attributes. But, you know, I think maybe the influence of abstraction could have had him move or nudged him to move towards depicting the figure more in this geometric manner. Hard to tell again. He was very coy about what he often said about his own work. And so here, you know, sort of sense of movement of someone trying to catch their balance on the wet stones as they move nude through the landscape. And movement was very important to all the Brucke artists and Kirchner in particular. And so, of course, they went to the variety shows and the cabaret. And that's two examples of the works he did based on what he saw there are here. Here's a lithograph. And then here, the Panama Dancers, which is a oil on canvas. Very small, but they're both in the gallery and on the third floor. And in his works with dancers, he was always trying to show, not to show so much of what they look like and their unique physical features, but instead what they were doing. So he would try to show, you know, legs kind of kicking and up, petticoats in a flurry here. You know, you can kind of get the sense that, you know, everything's whirling around. As well, it was the male figure was often a prop. There wasn't, when their couples were shown. These are actually all women here. Just two are dressed in a more masculine costume. But as you will also see in the Berlin street scene paintings, the male figures usually recede into the background. It was always foregrounding the female figures. But again, what was very important to all the Brücke artists was capturing this movement and that exemplified just untethered sexuality and eroticism for the Brücke artists. And also here, just showing, very free sexuality in the different settings. But then, I would call that the very innocent sense of sexuality that Kirchner had, but he also had, he did create two series of lithographs, one in 1910, an example of which you see here, and one in 1915, example of which you see here, which shows a very distinct contrast between his sort of the mood of his sexual depictions that he did here in, let's say, the Brücke years. You see a couple together, these sort of carved objects laying around, sort of intimate, loving depiction, although voyeuristic. And in fact, Kirchner was known, he said that too, when he was sketching, if he was sketching a couple in this position, that he would stop lovemaking to make sure he could catch that perfect sketch. So he was very much right there looking at that. But again, a much more tender moment. Later on, in the 15, when he was working on the street scenes, he did this series, which is basically different depiction of different sexual fetishes. This is the breast fetishist, and it's hard to depict because he uses this very noisy lithograph technique and pretty much just obscures the stone. But here you see a man reaching for this woman's breast. There's other organs being shown there, another woman here, shirtless. Really leaves nothing to the imagination. But this seems to be very much more sort of commodified and dire look at what sexual relations between man and woman could be. And that brings us back to the street scenes and what his mentality, what was going on at the time when he started these. Let's move forward. So the sheer number of street scene studies indicates the level of ambition Kirchner brought to this theme. They include countless notebook sketches, some 30 large drawings in pen and ink and wash, as well as in pastel and charcoal, and over 20 prints. While it is relatively common for him to base paintings on earlier sketches, he never made use of detailed preparatory drawings. He explained that they were not a benefit, since forms arise and undergo change during the process of work. Jotted down impressions found in his sketchbooks provide the seeds for paintings of all kinds, but his ideas also developed further in the studio as he turned to canvas or made additional studies in ink or pastel, a practice that seems to have increased in the Berlin years. Prints also played a role in this evolution. While Kirchner did not neglect other motifs during the period from 1913 to 15, none received the thorough analysis undertaken with the street scenes. Kirchner's Streetwalker, a representative of the bustling modern metropolis, acknowledges negative forces without denying excitement and allure. In images of both, that are both of confrontational immediacy and narrative complexity, Kirchner creates figures who epitomize the anonymity, loneliness, and disquietude of the urban street, as well as its artificial veneer and sometimes tawdry glamour. He acknowledges predatory forces and injects an element of danger. Through distorted perspectives that places protagonists on the frontal picture plane, he constructs a claustrophobic space that implicates the viewer. And now I'm just going to walk through the seven paintings, point out some details, as well as show you some of these really not preparatory works on paper, but related works on paper for each of the works, and how it sort of helps us get a sense a little bit of what he was doing with each canvas. This is Five Women on the Street from Cologne. The five prostitutes depicted in this painting, the first painting in the street scene series, reflect the profession's prevalence in Berlin during these years. One social commentator of the day described their presence in this way, quote, "The chain of women that strut around the square or make a detour in the neighboring streets in front of the flashing bar signs is endless. Here, the women are as if on stage, resembling dancers in a revue. However, unlike his energetic dance hall performers, their gestures are subtle and their offer of sexuality is illicit." And just to point out, if you can't, some of these reproductions are a little too dark. You know, here's the five figures with their plumes kind of coming up, strange hats, and their mantles or mantles. A pencil sketch, large pen, brush, and ink study, and a woodcut, each presented here, demonstrate Kirchner's organic approach to his painted composition. Kirchner believed that each technique offered different possibilities. Here, in fact, the woodcut, Five Coquettes, which is in the center, likely followed the painting in the composition's evolution. If Kirchner used the painting as a guide to draw his image on the woodblock, the imagery of the composition would be reversed when inked and printed onto paper from the block. This is, in fact, the case when comparing the woodcut with the painting. And you see that women are facing each other here, the wheel of the carriage here and on here, and this woman here, you know, all, both facing different directions. And you'll notice that her face changes quite a bit, becomes much more mask-like and abstracted, and maybe more akin to what one would find in Picasso's Demoiselle. It's sort of an intriguing detail. Again, you know, it shows that he was really kind of never done with the composition, always moving through. Now, this is an example of a sketchbook, three of which are included in the exhibition on the third floor, and also are animated in digital digital animation, interactive animations in the exhibition, so I encourage you to go look at them. He did 106, there are 160 existent sketchbooks. He might have done more. Some probably have been lost, I'm not sure, but these sketchbooks he had with him at all times and would just, you know, do these very, very quick sketches wherever he was. They're filled with drawings from the beach, from the studio, here on the street. And you see the sort of beginnings of what was to become this painting, and then taken back to the studio and maybe elaborated in pen and ink, and then moving on to oil canvas, and then later a woodcut. While two female prostitutes occupy the center of attention in the painting Berlin street scene here, the two men seen from behind have been interpreted in various ways. Again, sorry, it's dark. Here's the main figure with seen from behind. Here's another. And then the women. Some observers of these two men consider the figures to be one man depicted in sequential views, just, you know, on his way down the street. Indication of movement and passage of time. But others have suggested that the predominantly turned head signals that Kirchner is depicting himself, since the other known self-portraits also show the artist with a cigarette in his mouth, like the lithograph I showed you on yellow paper earlier. And that, in fact, has also been, that observation has also been supported by the fact that here, when you go in the gallery, do look. It's a strange painting in the sense that it's signed twice. Not sure. There's a signature over here, and then there's another one right here. But the hand, there are other existent paintings where his hand, or a hand of the figure, is right next to the signature, or is pointing towards the signature. And that does occur in some of the self-portraits. And so it's thought that here, his hand, he was saying, "See, this is me," by using that sort of visual language to point that out. And also, the exaggerated red lips, which, you, again, the color's a little off here, but you'll see in the gallery, immediately link him to the heavily made-up women that are also in the picture. a possible gesture of self-identification by the artist with the prostitutes who are his primary motif. And again, I take you back to that comment where I made, I am like the coquettes myself. There are not many mentions of coquettes and prostitutes in his writing, but when he does talk about them, there is this sort of affinity that's expressed, such as in that quote I read. So a similar male figure appears in the etching Crowd of Passersby with an Electric Tram Car, with its delicate lines drawn in lyrical arch-like motions, and that's this work on the left. Because his prints tended to be very busy and distressed in nature of their plate, they're often hard to read, so I encourage you to look at this one close in the gallery. But here you see that turned head, tram car coming through in the back. Here, Kirchner defines the crowded street as a whirl of centrifugal forces. A tram and its tracks add a somewhat stabilizing element to the right, but also evoke the congestion of the urban street. The dramatic gesture of the men's rotated head can also be found in two other busy street scenes in ink and watercolor. In street scene, this one, and the elegant couple, a woman on the right of the composition assumes the same pose. So here, and then there. And it was, this is something that, you know, it was one of the repeated motifs that he only included in one painting, the one that's at the Neue Gallery here in New York. But it really helps to, it was a way of building his composition so that it sort of implicated you as the viewer in the painting. The main figure was right in the center, is facing the same way you are, and really opening up the canvas to the space of the gallery in which it's being seen, and as if you could just walk right on onto the street with the other figures that are there. So he was seeming to be playing with how a painting could, not too much unlike film, to try to capture and implicate viewers within the narrative and really make you feel like you're present, which of course film was really coming into full form at that point. He was trying to stick with canvas and works on paper and maybe trying to evoke similar feeling. The particular brand of sexuality associated with the streetwalker leads Kirchner to a distinctive range of color to convey varying moods. Strident pink and purple and red communicate a sense of dazzling excitement. Black connotes glamour, but with an added component of danger. The glistening coat of the prominent male figure in Street Berlin here appears satin-like in color and texture. This, together with the figure's posture and possibly furtive glance away from the streetwalkers, perhaps at a window display, could be construed as signaling a shady character. Males in black, dark blue, or deep purple tones lurk in the backgrounds of several of the street scene paintings. And here's this figure, and the, again, really upturned perspective, but the windows of the store kind of coming down here in the sidewalk, and then the street over here with the car. This ominous mood is captured in an etching and lithograph. This very dark kind of mood that he was that he did get with a lot of these dark characters looming in the background. In both this etching and the lithograph, both depict, like the painting, female pedestrians flanked by the street and storefronts. As I mentioned before, it's hard to make this out because his prints are often distressed. But here you see again this storefront here and the woman walking here. Through unorthodox uses of printmaking techniques, Kirchner sometimes achieved particularly gritty effects that give a negative veneer to his urban scenes. For his etchings, such as War Widows on the Street, he often allowed imperfections to remain on the surfaces of his copper plates, resulting in irregular printing in areas of distress. By the way, he printed all his prints by himself, by hand. He wasn't, if you're familiar with how printmaking has operated in the past 100 years, it's usually additioned where someone is assisting you and in a very regulated environment of a workshop. And for him and the Brucke artists, it was all done in their own studios, very, just do-it-yourself materials and equipment that they had. His printing press still exists and is in a private collection in Switzerland. So he often approached, in the same way, he often approached lithography in a similarly unconventional manner, as seen in Lady in the Rain on the right, by manipulating the surface of the stone to produce unusual tonalities. And again here, you see all this noise all over. It's hard to say if he just, didn't have proper means of getting a new stone or cleaning it but whatever the case is, he left it and he seemed to like the outcome and thought it added to the compositions he made. At the time Kirchner painted the street scene series, various art movements were competing for attention. A much talked about exhibition of Italian futurist painting was held in Berlin in 1912, soon after Kirchner arrived in the capital. The goal of futurism was a new conception of dynamism, inspired by the speed and power of modern technology. In the painting Street Scene, Friedrichstrasse in Berlin, the male figure parading behind the streetwalkers seemed derived from a futurist conception of motion. And here they come down the street, sort of a multiplicity of what we were seeing in the earlier painting with the man in his back. And the street, the half carriage here coming into the picture. I'm going to start moving a little quickly because I know it's getting late here, unfortunately. Here is I wanted to side by side with the preparatory sketch. For this work, here you see the men in the street coming into being already. Their little insect legs coming from the background, but then many more appear in the painting. And as well, this man who's plays a primary role in the pastel drawing disappears behind a lamppost in this. Two Women on the Street is a sort of a regular format of the series because it is just half torso, which creates a much more intimate and up-close depiction of these streetwalkers, as if Kirchner was almost right in their face when he did his sketches. And in fact, there are many sketches where he was seemed to be in that position. This pastel drawing, however, almost creates a more unique look in each of the faces, as if portraiture. But if you go back, they become very mask-like in the ultimate form in the canvas. And again, one wonders how close he really was when he was sketching these. Was he sitting to the side on a street corner, or was he really, just standing there almost, right next to this couple with his sketchbook? And were they aware of him jotting down his notes and his drawings? Then this, the grand dame of the series, Potsdamer Platz. If you recall from the photograph I showed you earlier, here, the Bahnhof, the train station, and then the Café Vaterland in the background. And the two women standing on this traffic island, the sort of pedestal in itself, as if they're mannequins or models showing off the latest fashions, with this man precariously about to step in the busy traffic that is, you can imagine, is about to come through, and this wandering path that, the back alley that the prostitutes were taking their detours into. And then one detail that's so mysterious about this painting is this widow's veil, this hat. The war had begun, World War I had begun when this was painted, and the prostitutes, because of the war widows, were there were many more widows from the war, and many of them were wearing mourning clothing. And the prostitutes took up this attire as a disguise, one, so that they were not bothered by the police, and two, another way of sort of indicating to their customers that they were, in fact, available. And three, some war widows, because they were destitute, because they did not have a man in the household anymore to make their income, were turning to prostitution. So it's kind of an interesting historical indication there. And here are three drawings and woodcut that are related to this painting. As you can see, the widow's veil does not show up in any, so something that he brought to uniquely to the canvas. And again, this reversal taking place here between these two, indicating that perhaps the woodcut came later. And then finally, the last painting from Wuppertal, Women on the Street. This is the only painting in which a man still appears as a prominent figure. And it's right here, rather effeminate in nature. It is, you see the trousers kind of peeking out below, and the hat, it is in fact a male. And, you know, again, why he chose this to do that at this point when the female figure had been so dominant, it's kind of unknown, but it's an interesting anomaly. And he did do many sketches and drawings where, in fact, that was the case, where the male and female were both at the front of the picture plane, and here you see a couple examples of these. And most striking, I think you can see here, is how he moved between pencil, ink, and then pastel and chalk to really create his effects, and how, you know, just a real quick sort of back and forth with the pencil would then be translated into... here it would also be in pen, but then he would go into thicker washes to create darkened areas, but then would change into from moving from a very linear style of making his composition into using color fields to build his composition, and how he was able to really move through these different techniques so fluidly and was able to bring out different effects that were recognized what different effects could come from each. And then finally, that brings us back to the seven paintings, which I hope you can have a chance to go up and see if you haven't already. And taken together, these paintings present a view not only of the modern city, but of modernity itself, one that captures its many contradictions. The streetwalker personifies these ambivalent forces. The teeming metropolis, a magnet for business as well as culture, is glamorous and alluring, but also crowded and impersonal, and filled with dangerous elements. All these qualities of modern life are embodied here, in paintings that come at a distinct time in Kirchner's life, and also at a historic moment for Berlin and for Germany as a whole. Thank you. And if you have any questions, please let me know. Yes. Why don't I...
One of them.
Here, I'll go back to... Okay, which one?
The one on
the first one.
Left.
Five women.
Except that one has a beard.
Are you looking? Oh, on the far right. I think that's more of a shadow. That was if you go look, it's not as, unfortunately these reproductions are a little bit too saturated, so the blacks come out a bit too dark there, but I think if you go up you'll see that it's not that
under the chin.
it's more maybe a shadow, or maybe his definition of her chin, and which is thicker, because again I think the thing to remember with Kirchner is that he was not they were starting with when his time during his time with the Brucker Group, they were very staunchly against the academic drawing and the depiction of a very idealized physical figure. So you cannot really look at his figures as if they're depicting the exact anatomy. And so, you know, it becomes very abstracted, but yet figurative. So, yeah.
And how did he sell? Did he sell well through all this period?
He was selling, but it wasn't as well as the abstraction of the different people that were working abstractly were. He just wasn't ever embraced, as well as his other his Broca friends just weren't really embraced by the galleries and the critics. But he constantly produced. He did have collectors. Ultimately, the National Gallery in Germany did purchase his work in his lifetime. But he always just felt like it was inadequate, and he just wasn't taken as seriously as he wanted to. And he really thought himself as being the quintessential German artist and bringing along that tradition. An early painting is very similar to Cranach's. One Cranach painting of a female figure that is, and he did that specifically to show, I am taking this tradition on. And so when he was taken in as a degenerate artist and shown with the other degenerate artists by the National Socialists, that hurt him immensely. And ultimately his thought led to a suicide because he felt that all his hard efforts were for naught. So, any other questions?
Always with that drawing of figures.
Yeah.
He seems to be fixated on it.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing. He like, there was something about, I don't know if he was, he just loved women very much, or that was, but he was really obsessed with getting, looking and getting it right, and, trying to express something through the figure. That was his way of talking as an artist, I think. He did go on after he moved to Switzerland, when he was really having all his physical and health problems, he became more stylized in the work he did. It did become more abstracted, but it was always still based on the figure underneath. And that he moves away towards landscapes as well, and animals and the different farm life he saw in the Alps where he was living. So it changes over the years, but the real key things were through the
elongated, right?
Yeah, there was something, it's hard to say where he exactly, was coming from with that, using that sort of body type. I mentioned the things he said about seeing different body types, but, I think that, again, futurists were very influential and depicting movement, and I don't know if maybe that was the more stick figure, something was able to show movement a little more easy, not so much flesh, mm-hmm. just bone. Yes?
Was the bust of Nefertiti in the Berlin Museum at this time?
I don't know, but I don't know if that was already there. I do know that there is, there's a ethnographic museum that's in Dahlem, which is just a suburb of Berlin, which is still there and was there at the time, and then they went to the museums in Dresden. So that's what they were looking at. I highly encourage, if you're interested in German Expressionism, if you're ever in Berlin, and go to that ethnographic museum in Dahlem, because you literally see some of the figures that are carved into these different wooden houses and boats from mostly Pacific islands are almost, you see the same figures almost lifted onto those walls of the studio. It's like almost a one-to-one relationship between the two. So they were very much looking at what they saw in those museums. So. All right, thank you for coming.